We have a 4th of July weekend special today on Movie Royal as we're going to talk about the BFG, The Legend of Tarzan, and Wiener Dog. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Yes, D as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane, or in your living room, as Rashmi just thought we should
say. Yes, D said, yeah. Yes, D suggested. I think it's great.
If you love the movies, this show is the one for you. Greetings, everybody.
Hello.
Happy 4th of July weekend.
I know, right?
Yes.
Really Phew. Looking forward to this break.
I am so looking forward. I'm taking an extra day. I actually cleared my calendar and blocked the day.
Good for you. Yep. Yasti, are you doing anything fun?
I'm going to Netflix and chill.
It's Yasti's birthday.
That's yes. right. Yes.
It's Yasti's birthday weekend and then just happened to be fireworks.
Yes.
That's awesome.
In honor of my day of birth, there's fireworks. Yes.
Well, no, you're not a fourth.
No, I'm not a fourth. I'm a second. Yes. Okay. And
well, many happy returns.
This could be Yasti's birthday podcast.
What does that mean? What does many happy returns mean?
Means may your birthday keep coming. May you live a long life. May there be many happier still returns of this day.
Thank you for enlightening me. I did not know
That's
that.
That's a really good explanation.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh my God. I thought many happy too. Returns, as in the happy keeps returning.
Well, clearly we are incorrect. That Yasti's explanation is way more plausible.
Yes.
Well, that reminds me of the joke. Two women were sitting in a bathtub feeling happy, and then happy got up and walked away. Okay, on that note.
That's great. That's without any alcohol.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a great
well,
joke.
Yes, he said he was at the gym. I think he was at happy hour.
I think he was. With happy.
All right, podcasting, we must go.
Yes.
We have three movies to talk about, but did you want to do a quick Netflix picks in our usual segment?
Absolutely. Yes.
I can't find anything on Netflix. So, guys, what do you have?
So I can't believe that I haven't suggested this movie already. This is probably one of my top five movies of all time.
Oh.
It is the movie Clueless. Oh. And it's showing on Netflix. And I can't say enough about how much I love this movie. I love this movie. I've watched it probably, Joe, what would you say, 400 times?
No. Nobody's watched any movie 400 times, really.
It's maybe 40. You used to watch this movie like probably weekly at one point in your life.
Really?
Like, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
It's unreasonably clever.
It's
so good.
It's so
good
smart.
On every level. Alicia Silverstone and so many other people came out of this.
Yeah.
That girl that
and
died,
just the lingo. Yeah. Just the lingo.
Brittany Murphy.
Paul Rudd was in it.
Yep.
What's her name?
Stacey Dash. Donald
yes.
Faison.
Yes,
Alyssa
Donald
Donovan. Breckin Meyer. Jeremy
yes.
Sisto.
But it felt like a real zeitgeist at the time. It was a spot on reflection of our culture.
Which is not to be underestimated considering it's a remake. It's based on Emma. It's based on, Jane Austen.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. Right?
I think I knew that. Yeah, I think I knew that.
It's about a girl trying to find, find love for other people, and she's not so successful herself.
It's just ridiculous. This is like one of the most delightful movies on my list. I mean, it's definitely in my top five all-time favorite movies, so Clueless.
Good choice.
Yeah, please watch it. And if you've watched it, watch it again. It's one of those movies that you get something new every time you watch it.
Yeah.
Yasti, what's your pick?
And Alicia Silverstone was just perfect at that time for that role.
Yeah.
My movie pick is actually also one of my top five, but not top five ever, but top five of the new millennium for sure. And it's a movie that I have unreasonable love for. I've championed it from the time it came out. It was the best film of the year in the year it came out, and the movie is Short Term 12.
Oh, yeah.
And It's plain and simple. If you see this movie and you don't like it, you can't be friends with me. I love this movie so much. It's about two individuals who work in a facility which takes care of kids who are delinquent or kids who are part of the social care. And Brie Larson, who should have at that time been nominated at least for a Best Actress Oscar, is so good as a caretaker, who's so good with the kids in her job, but yet so distant at home and so different. And it's a movie that's perfect in every way for me. It's very high bar.
It's perfectly tragic.
And yet hopeful.
Yeah. And I think it definitely put Brie Larson on all our radars.
Yeah.
No, it's terrific.
Great pick.
We discovered it at a film festival, I think.
We did.
I just remember just the impact it had on all of us coming out of that.
And Destin Daniel Cretton, who is a local San Diegan, who Yazdi and I got to meet, who is a delightful person. Just a delightful person to speak with.
Now, he's working on something else now, isn't he?
He was working on a script which Jennifer Lawrence was attached to, and I don't know. That's the last I'd heard of anything, but...
The Glass Castle is just filming.
With
due
Jennifer
out
Lawrence.
In 2017.
Okay.
He's a real talent. I can't wait to see it. I mean, that movie, he wrote it, and it was based on a short film that he had made. We saw the short film, but that was a little rough around the edges, but the talent was on show, and he took it and expanded it brilliantly, which doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people like Rami Malek, who's on
Mr. Robot. Is it Mr. Robot?
Mr. Robot came from there.
Yeah.
The other character who's in a lot of movies now, he's African-American.
He was just in the NWA movie.
Right. So many of those actors that was their springboard for the movie. And Brie Larson, of course. And don't let the title of the movie turn you off. I know it's an awkward title, Short Term 12, and it really stands for a short-term facility where kids under 12 are kept. But you owe yourself to watch this movie.
So The Glass Castle, which is this movie that's coming out, has an amazing cast. It's actually Brie Larson leading the list. Naomi Watts, Woody Harrelson, Max Greenfield, Sarah Snook, Ella Anderson, whole load of other people.
Wow.
Really good cast.
Excellent.
I hope this is Brie Larson doing him a favor back. Yeah, which is great.
Enjoy your pick.
So I'm going to cut right to the mainstream and cheat, as always. There's a list that's published every month of what's coming to Netflix. So on July 1st, which is tomorrow as of time of recording, the entire Back to the Future series gets released on Netflix, which... I can't actually wait to watch again. I mean, they're movies that I watched umpteen times over and over through the 80s and 90s. Now, it's been a long time since I saw them. So if you're sitting around wondering what to do on a July 4th weekend, what a perfect movie trilogy to make. I think they did fall off in the third one, but I thought one and two were brilliant stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I saw it like a couple of years ago. It hasn't dated at all. You know, it doesn't have the dated feel. It just feels so clever and smart and fresh and fun.
Yeah.
You know? Robert Zemeckis.
It's held up really well.
I was going to say, it's one of those movies that, again, whenever it's on, I think number two was on maybe even a few weeks ago. And it's one of those movies that we always say, you know, as soon as you see it on the channel, you can start watching from wherever you are. And it forces you to watch the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart.
Most people listening to this have already seen, but just be aware they're on Netflix and they're not going to be there forever.
Yeah.
So if you're scratching around, yeah, good fun.
Very nice picks.
Okay, we have three movies to talk about this week. We have The BFG, we have The Legend of Tarzan, and we have Wiener Dog. Where would you like to start?
The Legend of Tarzan.
So The Legend of Tarzan is directed by David Yates, who has 25 movies to his credit as a director, but he's probably best known for helming four of the Harry Potter movies, Harry Potter, Order of Phoenix, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, and then both the Deathly Hallows movies, which rounded up the whole series. And what's to say about Legend? I mean, what's to say about Tarzan? Everybody knows the story of Tarzan. The movie has pretty good star cast, Alexander Skarsgård and Margot Robbie, play Tarzan and Jane, respectively. And it, the movie also includes Christoph Waltz and Samuel L. Jackson in pretty major roles. The writing credits go to Adam Kozad and Craig Brewer. And of course, the movie is based on the original Tarzan story as written by Sir Edgar Rice Burroughs. And so really, does the world need another iteration of the Tarzan tale? What do you guys think?
So what struck me about this is it has a really short act one, and then we're really into the action pretty immediately. It's a good movie in the moment. It's entertaining. It's got a tight and purposeful story and great production. It's just a little hammy at times, and I'm not sure if that's tongue-in-cheek gone a little awry or just that it hovers around that Mills and Boone's alley a little too closely. But I really enjoyed it in the moment.
Joseph?
I found it reasonable entertainment in the moment, but I've been thinking about it in the run-up to recording the podcast, and it's been annoying me more and more. The more I think about it, it's kind of a complete, you know, I'm at the point where I'm regarding it as kind of a complete miscue here. I feel like we have a lot of opportunity to do this kind of thing well. And, you know, maybe I'm looking for the Christopher Nolanization of the Tarzan legend.
Oh, my
which,
God.
Oh God. No. The world doesn't need that.
It just felt so dismissible that it wasn't believable. The Samuel L. Jackson character here was a contrivance and an annoyance. And what is he doing here in this movie? It was a cartoon character thrown in for comedic relief. So I just felt that the whole thing thematically and tonally was all over the place. And it, like I say, in the moment it was, you know, reasonable popcorn entertainment. But now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like it's a huge missed opportunity to do something big, something grand, something on a scale that we haven't seen before. Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. Bring it. I want it. This isn't it.
Yes, Dee.
So I really remember we had this discussion right before the movie started, you know, how we would rate it.
Oh, that's true. We did.
You know, and I'd say I'd probably rate it a 6 out of 10. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised at how much I liked this film. Maybe it was because I came from a place of very low expectations, but I think to the movie's greatest credit, it completely bypasses all the cheesy elements of the Tarzan story. There's none of that, you know, chest beating, me Tarzan, you Jane. In fact, the whole origin story is entirely missing. And I think that's a clever thing to do. And I think what they've done is the movie starts after that story. What happens after Tarzan goes back to civilization and now he's Lord Greystroke and, you know, he gets pulled back. And I think in its imagination of that world, it, for me at least, it hurts me to say this because I really wanted to hate the movie, but in its imagination of the world and the animals and so forth, it almost approached like Jungle Book, like, you know.
I agree somewhat with you, Yazdi, because in the moment I felt that way. I thought, wow, we're getting another rendition, another great rendition of the Jungle Book, but this is a bit more adult in its theme, right? And then, like Joe, as I've thought about the movie, the bits I didn't like were this. Yeah, there was some cheesiness in the relationship between Tarzan and Jane, and I didn't like the Christoph Waltz character. Yeah. You know, Christoph Waltz is a really interesting character. We've said this every time we see him in a non-Tarantino movie. This character felt like the Inglorious Bastards character without any of the bite, which just leaves you feeling very flat. So that was annoying. And then I kind of kept thinking, gosh, you know, Alexander Skarsgård committed to being Tarzan, and I like that. But I couldn't imagine anyone else doing it, but it felt like two B-listers in a big movie. And I couldn't get over that feeling of it.
Yeah, my biggest annoyance is just how synthetic this felt.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I just didn't
the CGI
buy...
or the
yeah. So the swinging through the jungle on the world's longest vine to get onto a train, you know, this kind of thing didn't feel real to me. And I think the rest of the movie does try and bring in this kind of real world, you know, like Yazdi, you mentioned exactly the thing that I think throws me off, which is it does a very nice rendition of what it would have been like for him to be who he was in the time that he was, and, you know, post Tarzan, post jungle era. But then when you take him to the jungle, it becomes very almost Spider-Man like the way he bounces around these trees and things. And
but I think, that's who he is.
Well, I know, but the movie doesn't gel, right? You know, if you're going to do this kind of gritty portrayal of you know, the post jungle Tarzan in, you know, a modern world where politics and scheming and that kind of thing all takes place, and then you throw him into the jungle where he becomes, you know, bouncy Tarzan, Spider-Man, Superman, the superhero almost, it doesn't fit very well. You know, the fighting with the apes is not done well.
I thought that was good.
It was very good.
It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel survivable. It feels very, I don't know. There's nothing to me that made it felt believable. So I'm beating on it because it's a missed opportunity.
You're beating on your chest.
And then to throw in the scream. I mean,
yeah, but you didn't see him do it, so that was good.
But the screen wasn't the usual screen. It's a different
exactly
screen.
The same screen.
No,
it was similar.
It was similar.
It was similar.
It was that.
But I think it's great that I didn't find any aspect of it cheesy. And you know, there's a great scene at the start when he goes back to the forests and he runs into this tiger family.
Oh, my goodness, that made me cry.
And he kind of nudges against...
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that is so beautifully done. That was the about turn for me. I was kind of, you know, reluctant about the movie. I was a little bit cynical about it. And after that, when I'm like, I settled back in my seat and started really enjoying it. And I like that, you know, Tarzan is not this beefed up, you know, big wall of muscle. You know, he's a very lean, slender, believable kind of Tarzan. I like the fact that, you know, I think it is Christopher Nolanized in that, you know, it kind of tries to draw in what things were like in those colonial times with a lot of slavery and a lot of, you know, tribes being abused and used by the white privilege at that time. And, you know, they didn't have to do it. And it's very dangerous doing it because that's a low-hanging fruit and you can come off sounding preachy, but it never seemed preachy
to
me.
I like those elements.
So I like that.
I did like those elements. That's not where I grumble, but I agree with you. I mean, I think those ideas are very nice. It's just the execution.
And I don't know, maybe again I came to it from a place of such low expectations. But you know, the bad guy in the movie, well, there are many bad guys, but one of the bigger bad guys is Jimon Hounsou, who plays this slave leader, you know, not slave leader, this leader of
tribal leader. Yeah.
And he has a moment towards the end of the movie where we understand kind of why we understand why he's the bad guy, but he's given comprehension of why he's behaving bad, why he wants Tarzan dead. And, you know, I don't know, I think somebody has paid attention. There's some care which has gone into this, which they didn't have to.
Yeah, I agree. It's more thoughtful than it needs to be. I mean, right. I came away with this really nice feeling of, I think this overarching theme of slavery. There's the obvious slavery, which you just mentioned, Yazdi. But I think it's exploring the fact that we're, you know, slaves to our culture or slaves to our hearts or slaves to doing the right thing. And I like that general theme that kind of came across. And I did like the animal stuff, that bond between human and man. Again, I just feel like it lingered too. I didn't like the romance aspect. It just became a little bit two Mills and Boons. And then it got a little bit hammy with that Christoph Waltz character.
Yeah. Christoph Waltz, I'm shocked to see, has like zero versatility outside of Tarantino movies. He's playing the same character over and over again, and maybe he's typecast, but he should just start refusing those.
When you break into everyone's consciousness in the way that he did in Inglourious Basterds, I think you do end up with that label in that. That's why you hire Christoph Waltz, right?
But
when you want that despicably evil, intelligent, somewhat charming bad guy, because he was such a nuanced character in Inglourious. That's what everyone I think wants from their bad guy. You know, when
but I want variations on that bad guy.
I do too.
Yeah,
I mean,
agree.
I don't. He's the same guy in Spectre. He's the same guy in Horrible Bosses too. He's the same guy here in Tarzan. Water for Elephants. He's the same. Like very different movies,
big
but
eyes,
he's the same.
Yeah, a little bit different. But.
Yeah, but. And then I did like, sorry, while we're, and I promise we'll wrap up soon, but while we're on it, I really liked the Margot Robbie character, not her with Tarzan, but I like that she kind of has a spunk to her, and she's kind of, you know, she's no shrinking violet. She's not like, oh, you know, Tarzan.
She's not a damsel. She's, I like that she's not a damsel.
She's very easily underestimated as an actress, I think. There's more to her than the bimbo that we first met in Wolf of Wall Street and others. There's, I liked her in Focus last year.
She was so good in Focus, yes.
And she's just, like I say, there's more to this actress than I think, you know, a pretty face. So, you know, I agree with that.
Yeah, I didn't love her in this. I liked the character. I just didn't love her in it.
She brings a little sass to the role.
Yeah, but I think that could have been achieved with someone else. I am looking forward to seeing her in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to wrap up. I mean, I can go first. You know, this has got great cinematography. It's a beautiful portrayal of Africa. I think the animals and the jungle and the humidity and the earth, they're very convincing. I've said the hammy stuff all the way through the podcast. I think this is a good, entertaining movie for the weekend. I don't think you'll be bored if you watch it. Yeah, I'm going to stick with the score I thought I'd give it, 7 out of 10.
I'm going to express a little disappointment. I think the script has many good ideas in it, and I think on paper, if I'd been given the script, the visuals and the things that I would have imagined coming out of it would have been very exciting to me. Unfortunately, I think there's a little bit of a drop ball here in terms of how they chose to bring out certain elements in the story. I wanted more of a serious take on it. I wanted more of a real world gritty feel than, you know, the kind of CG elements that we got in the jungle. So I can't hide my disappointment. 5 out of 10.
Wow. Yasty.
So again, I thought this would be a disposable Disney movie, and I was surprised that it is so much more than that. Maybe it's just the direction. I think David Yates really knows how to tell a story. I really liked the animals. I really liked, and like I mentioned, it kind of reminded me a little bit of The Jungle Book. I mean, there's, not to give anything away, but there's even spirituality. I think there's this whole scene with elephants, which I found deeply, yes, deeply moving. It was almost spiritual. And I think the visual look of the movie is brilliant. It reminded me of Paddington, another movie which had no reason to look as good as it did. So overall, mostly because it kind of so surpassed my expectations, I would have given it a 7, but I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to dislike this movie. So,
Okay.
We have Wiener Dog and the BFG.
The BFG.
Okay. So, this is a movie that I was very nervously anticipating, in part because I was such a fan of Roald Dahl when I was younger, mm-hmm, and this is an adaptation of Roald Dahl's wonderfully weird imagination. Now, I can't say that going into the movie I remembered much about it at all, other than a genuine fondness for the book that I read probably half a dozen times between the ages of 5 and 10. So it's been a very, very long time. I won't say how long on the podcast since I read it. But certainly when you know that Steven Spielberg is at the helm, when you know that there's some terrific talent in the form of Mark Rylance, mm-hmm, as the BFG, Rebecca Hall is in this movie, and some other big names, the level of anticipation was very high. So really not much more to say introduction wise on this. Guys, what did you think of the BFG?
So I have a lot to say about the movie, but at the outset I'm going to say that this is a movie about a very spunky, spirited little girl who gets abducted by a very large older man, and she kind of learns to like him only because the rest of his cronies are so much more worse than him. So I watched this whole movie feeling I couldn't shake off this feeling of creepiness. At some level, it almost seemed to be defending the abduction of young kids. And I know this is from a Roald Dahl play, but I don't know, maybe they should have gone out of their way to kind of avoid that. But I don't know, it just, yeah. But there's lots to like about the movie. but creepy, for me.
I don't disagree with you, Yasti. But I do disagree with you because, for me, this was disappointingly dull and flat with so much potential to be enchanting and emotional. You know, Roald Dahl always has a darkness and a stark reality to his stories at times, but they're equally fantastical and deep and thought-provoking, and I didn't get too much of that from this one. I haven't read the source material, so I don't know what to compare it to. I agree with you. I think inherently this is a scary movie for kids because it's about a kidnapping is how I described
it. She gets abducted against her will by a very large man in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Older man.
Well, since you put it that way.
How come nobody's
talking... And you didn't like Tarzan?
How come nobody's talking about this? But anyway, we will.
No, seriously, I hadn't looked at it that way at all. I mean, I looked at it very much through childlike eyes in terms of this being a little bit of a fairy tale, you know, a little bit of a... You know, for me, again, it's been a long time since I read the book, but there's a certain element of, you know, this is a girl living in an orphanage, and is this her invisible friend? Is this her made-up world? And so I kind of approached the movie from that perspective, as it was all, you know, very, very Roald Dahl kind of snozcumber, grotesque nonsense speak, and it very much felt to me like a little bit of a daydream, and I enjoyed it actually. I mean, I think the relationship between the young girl and BFG was a fun thing. He felt very protective of her, and she was the kind of the friend that she needed in the world that she was living in. I don't know. I didn't find it too terribly exciting, so I'm not going to try and defend this movie from a place of great joy and love. I do think it was a little long and a little dull for kids. I think, Rashmi, you made the point that it could be quite frightening. So it's kind of an odd one here. I'm not quite sure where I feel.
You know, I thought Steven Spielberg's contribution last year with The Bridge of Spies, yeah. I think it's a masterpiece. You know, I think time will look back on The Bridge of Spies with a lot of respect and a lot of fondness. So I've really had high expectations, and I think... My single biggest problem with the movie is that the middle part, like, it just kind of lulls into a daydream. The whole movie, I mean, it kind of lacks a narrative, you know, a narrative drive. And it's kind of surprising coming from Spielberg, who's such an expert storyteller. I will say the first half hour of the movie felt like I was a kid, felt like I was 10 years old, and that reading fairy tales, and it has that magic in it. You know, everything that leads up to when she lands up in the giant's lair. I mean, it's had a bit of the magic about it, but then it kind of became very repetitive. And there's this whole part about the giant collecting dreams, and it was so abstract a concept that, with the best of Spielberg's intentions, I still don't understand what that was all about. I really don't.
Well, it seemed a means to an end, and very, very divisive, just for the sake of the story, as opposed to anything meaningful before or after that happens. I mean, the problem I had with it, and I think it's an interesting choice to make, is the giants being so CGI and animated when we're in a real world. And I kind of felt as if they had made the choice to make them real people, that maybe we would have had more of an emotional connection. I just think the other giants were so strange. I didn't understand the characters of... Those other giants. It didn't make sense. The accents, the look.
Because it's the imagination of a young girl. These are, you know, dirty, horrible, giant, mean people. You know, there doesn't have to be much to them other than they need to be horrible and nasty and you know, grotesque and disgusting and mean and mean and mean and mean. You know, mean like older boys.
Two-dimensional.
Mean. You know, mean like... You know, the man on the street who shouts at the young kids to stop, you know, playing football outside his house. You know, they were just mean and stupid, and she saw them as stupid and grumpy and horrible. So I don't know that there was meant to be much more to them.
But I didn't understand the world itself.
They eat children. They're horrible monsters that eat children in the middle of the night, steals them from their bed. That's all they were. And I don't know that there was meant to be some kind of, you know, motive or drive for their existence.
And so then you just have a movie where everything just is, and the plot doesn't really move forward. And so when it does move forward, it's very contrived.
Because it's a kids' movie.
Yeah, but we just...
We're trying to we want more from it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right, but we've seen some really good kids' movies. Like, exceptional kids' movies. Yeah. And this... Therefore, when you hold it up against those other kids' movies, this really fails into comparison. I'm interested to see what you liked about it, Yessi, because you said there are some things that you really liked.
The visuals of the movie are just brilliant. I mean, that whole world that is created is really quite something. And the other piece I really liked, I cannot fault it, is the action pieces are just amazing. They're really very good. There's this whole piece where, you know, the other giants are in there and she hides in a fruit, and you know, there's a lot of slapstick and running
fun.
Around and
there is that is so that, fun. You know, yeah, it's
kind
right.
of that's so energetic and so clever and so fun, but then it kind of becomes meditative, which is unusual for a kid's movie. I mean, I don't like too much, you know, craziness and movement and something so dynamic, but it almost kind of lulls into this meditative place where they go into this dreamland and they're catching these dreams and I don't know.
But what struck me was just how much the kids in the audience seemed to be enjoying it. Mm. I mean, they were sat still, they were paying attention, and they all seemed to have had a wonderful time coming out. So
I don't know, I think maybe they were asleep. I think it was so meditative that it put them to sleep.
No, kids get boisterous when they get bored. We've seen that happen many times. I think they were genuinely mesmerized and taken in by the world. The other thing, just to talk about positives, is I loved the movie's central kind of humor. You know, the puns, the mispronunciation of words... the whiz-popping scene was delightfully funny to me, and it tickled my very silly funny bone, but it really did. I found myself having some genuine laughs during that, you know.
The last half
all
was fun.
All I have to say is whiz-popping, and it just makes me giggle.
Yeah, I'd say the last 15 minutes were good.
Were very good. And, you know, to give credit where it's due, I liked... It has a bit of magic in it. I really did. The early parts feel magical. It kind of threw me back decades to when I was a child. And I think that's very hard to make you feel nostalgic for an
Absolutely.
Earlier time in your life. But it just, I guess I'll say this and I'll wrap up as well. For me, you know, Spielberg has created this oeuvre of films across decades now. And for me, the movie which comes closest in comparison is E.T., you know, it's also about a kid connecting with a creature from another world, if you will, and that kind of teaches her a lot of things, and she kind of bonds with this creature. But E.T. seems, you know, as 30 years old as it is, it just seems like so much superior a film. I mean, every time I watch it, I cry about E.T. I did not connect at all with the BFG. I mean, he just felt fake to me, and there is... You know, there's an attempt to kind of, you know, squeeze out some pathos, some emotions out of you, and it didn't work for me at all. So I think it failed at the emotional level. But visually, it's great. So I'll give it a somewhat generous 7 out of 10, maybe a 6. 6 out of 10.
Joe?
You know, I mean, I have to forgive it its foibles and... approach it as I think it was intended to be approached, which is through the eyes of a child. And I think there's not much depth here. I'll give you that. I don't know, and I don't remember the book other than loving it very much for the way it made me feel as a child. I just remember it was a very comforting book in some ways. You know, this
no
big,
wonder this that big... explains a lot.
But no, this
Joe got his emotional heft from the BFG.
From Roald Dahl,
yeah. Yeah.
But no, but seriously, I mean, I think there's an element of friendship in here that I think is very endearing. So that did come across. I think the movie is again like I said about Tarzan. It's a bit of a misfire. It's an odd choice. To adapt at this point in time, I think, you know, the book may not lend itself to that. The whole dream catching idea is quite abstract. So, you know, I'll give it a 7 out of 10 as well. I did have some enjoyable moments with this, and I think genuinely, emotionally, I felt what they were trying to get at.
I don't fault the acting in this movie or the writing in this movie. I just didn't connect with this movie at all. I just found this so incredibly dull, and at nearly 2 hours, it's way too long. Maybe there was a shorter, better movie here that just didn't come together. It's not a film I would recommend that you rush out and see unless you love the source material, as you've heard Joe talk about. I'm not even sure I would want to take my kids to see this, given what it's really about. Yazdi, which you've described. For me, it's a 5 out of 10.
It's a difficult one.
Yeah, very strange movie.
It's a very difficult one to make sense of. And it's far too long.
And I think if this movie came out of nowhere, I'd probably love it a lot more. But, you know, it came with a fair degree of celebration, and it's Spielberg, and so you expect more.
Yeah.
And so that's why you graded against that. Yeah.
Okay, movie number 3 of the week is Wiener Dog.
So this looks like my type of movie, and I didn't get to see it, so I'm interested to see whether I should rush out and see this one. So a dachshund passes from oddball owner to oddball owner, whose radically dysfunctional lives are all impacted by the pooch. This is directed and written by Todd Solondz, and it stars one of my favorites, Greta Gerwig, Keaton, Nigel Cook, Tracy Letts, and some others. So I know we all love Greta Gerwig on Movie Wallahs. Is this another rendition of goodness to add to her resume? Joe, why don't you go first?
Well, I literally went to the screening because Yazdi said, oh, it has Greta Gerwig in it. And I was like, great. You know, we've got Maggie's Plan. We've got Mistress America. We've got Damsels in Distress. We've got all these wonderful movies, Frances Ha. And so I thought, well, great, I'm going to get another Greta Gerwig
hug
dose of loveliness. Yeah. Didn't get that at all. This movie was batshit crazy. it really was. I mean, at times I was eating this kind of beer and cheddar popcorn that we saw at the Angelica Theater, and I was like looking at the popcorn thinking, what is in this stuff? Because I am seriously tripping here.
Really?
Now, the movie had it's very confident in its direction and its theme. It's a series of like short stories. They're loosely linked by the presence of this wiener dog that enters people's lives, and so you see, you know, a few minutes here, a few minutes there, you know, of various people's lives. But I mean it was so bizarre at points. It has a lot of things to say. I think it's very astute in its observations. As crazy and nonsense as it was, I did get a kick out of it.
Yazdi, I bet you loved it.
I did not love it, but I appreciate it. I'm glad that movies like this exist, and I'm glad that Todd Solondz exists, because there's nobody else quite like him.
Uh-huh.
He's, you know, he's made, I think his most famous movie is Welcome to the Dollhouse,
uh-huh,
with Heather Matarazzo playing the Don Wiener character, which is, you know, quite cult-like. And interestingly, that grown-up Don Wiener is played by Greta Gerwig in this movie. But if you've seen, you know, he made a lot of movies in the early 90s and, you know, from the 90s to the early 2000s. And those movies were very controversial because they were all these kind of multi-storied, multi-character universes about people who are deeply, deeply flawed and who do horrible, nasty things. And he really pushed the boundaries in terms of, you know, the proprietary, particularly from a sexual perspective. And, you know, his movies were kind of hard to watch from that perspective. So he made Happiness, he made Storytellers, he made, he made lots of movies. So I think if you come from that perspective, you know what to expect. This is a person who likes to rub your face in the ground. He likes to rub your face in the sand, because he has a very, like you said, I think confident is a very good word. He has a very confident, but a very, very negative view of humankind.
Absolutely.
You know, he believes that humans are a terrible species, and we are a miserable lot, and we will ultimately do miserable things to each other, and we will always, and he kind of takes delight in kind of revealing the cruelty in amongst human beings, but he does it with a lot of fun and a lot of dark humor. So I guess what I'm trying to sum up by saying is this is not for everyone by a long stretch. I mean, most people will think it's like the worst movie they've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
walkout fodder.
It's walkout.
It really
some of
is.
Some of the stuff here is really extreme. Not as extreme by his standards, but I think if somebody goes into this like uninitiated, they'll be like, what the hell's going on? But I liked that it's about all these, this dog kind of entering the lives of these different characters, and we kind of get, it gives them a chance to speak about different people and different social rungs, you know, of how we live today.
So is the dog the gimmick to string some vignettes together?
Yeah, the dog comes in and out of their lives. So, you know, the dog gets adopted, then the dog gets rescued, then and enters their lives in different ways. And that just becomes the pivot point for switching from one story focus to someone else, because it's now someone else is caring for the dog, and it's never about the dog.
Right. So it's like that improv game, Leave the Stage.
Yeah, follow the leader.
Follow the leader.
In some ways, but the dog isn't necessarily central to any of the stories.
Right.
The dog just happens to be in their lives for a period of time.
Right.
And it's interesting because initially, through the first half of the movie, I think he's the writer and the director. So as he's writing these stories, he tries to give a sense of the dog went from person A to person B, and this is how person B got the dog, and then person C got it from person B. And then in the second half, he completely gives up on that. He's like, these are some random people who happen to have this dog. He doesn't even try to explain how, you know, the dog got from E to F to G. He's like, you know, it's pointless
forget
at
that.
This point.
Yeah,
forget that.
I think that was just a way to mess with us.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it was conscious. I felt like, okay, now he's just effing with me.
Yeah, I mean, he's very mischievous, I think, as a filmmaker. He's just playing with your head the whole time. There's this weird little segment which fills in for the intermission. It's like, it's in the middle of the movie, but it's this little intermission cutout which comes out, and the dog is moving through the Great Wall of China or whatever, and there's a little wiener dog song which comes along. It's so trippy.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go see this one. This looks like it's gonna be right up my street.
But it's pretty nasty. I mean, the whole there's a whole scene about piece about Danny DeVito which gets about as dark as anything can get. So you
and
know,
it's got
warned.
A good cast, right? I just like Julie Delpy, Ellen Burstyn. I didn't mention these. Zosia's Mamet, Kieran Culkin, Danny DeVito. I mean, this has got a big cast.
Yeah.
Okay. But sum up and score then. Remember, I have a day off tomorrow and it comes out tomorrow. I may go and see this one.
So I really honestly don't know what to make of it, other than, you know, I have to say, it made me smile. It's darkly comical throughout, and puzzlingly, it's retained in my conscience. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, it does everything it set out to do. I can't recommend it, like Yesti said, to any mainstream audience, in the sense of, I think, it's not necessarily a movie for the cognoscenti or the. It's just some people are going to get it and it'll be on their wavelength. Others are just going to be annoyed by it. So I'm going to give it I don't know. I don't know what to give it. 7, 8. I enjoyed it enough to call it an 8, but I'm going to give it a 7.
Wow.
It's so off kilter.
It's very, very off kilter. And I know we went to a subsequent screening this week, and somebody had missed the Wiener Dog screening, and they asked two other, you know, people who write about movies here in San Diego, and both of them said, oh my God, it's the worst film of the year. It's like nasty. And I think that's the reaction somebody might get if it's not up to your wavelength. But
it's
like
scoring really well on the tomato meter, 74%.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think, like I said at the outset, I'm just glad that it's so unlike anything else anybody's doing.
Yeah.
It's so off kilter. It's so confident in how it's almost unapologetic.
It's completely unapologetic.
It's very unapologetic.
I mean, there are at least two scenes that I remember where the camera is held
for an excruciating amount of time. Excruciatingly long amount of time. Yeah, I'm like, stop, enough. You've made your point. But it keeps going for another good, a minute or two.
It's like staring contest. Have you ever stared at somebody?
Yeah.
And after like 10 seconds, it starts to get weird. And then a minute later, it's like totally weird.
Right.
This is like that.
So I think this is this director's challenge to the audience. Like, how much are you going to take? How much are you going to take my vision of how terrible we are as human beings? But there's also humor here. And I, as much as I love animals, the ultimate end of the movie, and I'm not going to say anything about it, I got a chuckle out of it because it's so bizarrely inappropriate and yet so darkly right. So I just, you know, so anyway, I mean, it's not for everyone. I don't even know if I can recommend it, but I'm just glad this movie exists, and I'm glad that there's somebody making movies like this. You know, it's kind of the antidote to your mainstream crappy superhero reiteration number 5 again. So I too give it a 7 out of 10. It's certainly memorable. I haven't forgotten a single vignette from that movie. I have not.
I'm going to go and see it.
Yeah. Wiener dog.
All right. Let's wrap up the podcast here. We've rambled on for a good 45 minutes, and we need to talk about some other movies today, which we'll publish soon. So let us know what you think of these movies. Wiener Dog, BFG, Tarzan, mail at movieballers.com, twitter.com/movieballers, facebook.com/movieballers, instagram.com/movieballers. You can find us on the internet. We exist. Until our next episode, too many movies. Little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.